a deliberately planned false flag or whether it is accidental or a blowback or an unintended consequence, it's always used to expand the state.
Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it.
I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today. Hey, preppers and patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Dr. Catherine Albright talking about how you can take measures to protect your privacy against the surveillance state. So enjoy the show. Being a fiction writer, I have to search some sort of questionable things from time to time for research for my book. So I really don't want all of that stuff being kept on record. So I've been using Startpage for some time now, and I'm really excited to hear about Startmail. Now, if I'm using Startmail, would I be able to, let's say, send emails to people that have Gmail accounts, and would I still be able to encrypt that? And how does that work? And then how is it different than if I'm emailing from my Startmail account to somebody else's Startmail account?
Those are perfect questions. I'm so glad you asked that. So the way Startmail works is when you have a Startmail account, and you remember you get two free companion accounts. So you can give those to your wife or your business associate, your son, your colleague, whoever. So you automatically have encrypted email with those two people and everyone else who's on the Startmail system. And we had 70,000 people pre-register even before we opened. So we've got a big user community. So you're automatically able to use encryption with all of the Startmail users. So you have an extra layer of protection with them. When you're emailing outside the system, let's say you want to email your tax return to your accountant. You notice that he's, accountant Jones at gmail.com, and you don't particularly want to send this very sensitive document through that very, very prying service. So what you can do is we've actually got something called question and answer encryption, or sort of where you and the person arrange a password in advance. It's basically password-based encryption. And what's cool about it is you can tell your accountant, hey, listen, I'm going to be sending you my tax return, and the password is Eagle Fire, whatever. You guys just agree on something. And then you write an email, you go ahead and attach it normally, you send it to his Gmail account, you click encrypt this message, and then Startmail will pop up and allow you to put in a question and answer. And your question would be, what is the password? And the answer would be Eagle Fire. Now, when you send that document to your accountant, he never actually receives the email with your tax return. What he receives is an announcement or a little email stating that an encrypted message has been sent to him by you and to click this link to view it. And so that's all Google sees. And by the way, the Google can't click the link because they don't know the password. So even if Google sees what the link is, it doesn't matter. They don't know how to get into it. So your accountant now clicks the link, and what the link does is it takes him through the internet to a secure little tiny spot of our server in the Netherlands that we've set aside for your correspondence with him. And it's on an encrypted disk. It's PGP encrypted. It's fully encrypted. We can't see it. Nobody can see it. But you've got your little private correspondence space. And now when he answers the question, what is the password, and he writes Eagle Fire, he's now able to read that message. He's able to grab the attachment, download it, do whatever. He can hit reply. He can email back to you. You two can correspond back and forth as though it were just normal email. But it's all taking place outside of the U.S., and it's all taking place outside of Google's systems. And so it's really a creative solution that we came up with to enable people to write to people, even if they don't care about encryption or they don't care about privacy, but you do. You can kind of put them into this private space that's really not inconvenient for them at all. In fact, they barely notice that it's happening, and yet you still get to preserve your email communication.
And what do you think about Tor?
I actually really like Tor. I'm a big fan of Tor, but I'll tell you the reason I'm ever so slightly nervous of Tor is because I remember at the time that WikiLeaks was all coming out and Julian Assange had obtained all of that data, hearing that he had obtained a portion of it by being a node on Tor and simply intercepting the traffic that was flowing through. Now, I don't know if Tor has since resolved that, but that made me a little bit nervous that if you have traffic flowing through Tor, since everyone is sort of a node on the network, if you know how to do it, and if you're handling unencrypted traffic through Tor, that there's a possibility that you could be kind of a bad guy scarfing up information. So I haven't heard much about that since, but I know with WikiLeaks that was one of the key questions. So if people want to learn more about it, I would say probably research that question and figure out if that's been resolved.
And a lot of these things are not completely foolproof. And I suppose if you're the subject of an investigation by the NSA and they want to dig deep enough and look hard enough, they're still going to be able to get into a lot of stuff at the end of the day. But one of the things that all of this technology does is it at least makes them work for it, whereas when we're on Gmail and we're on Yahoo and we're on Facebook and Twitter, we're just volunteering all this information, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Here's the thing with PGP encryption, and I want people to understand the protections that we offer with StartPage, and this is really state-of-the-art encryption. You can get it other ways as well, but it requires a lot of work and some technical expertise, and we've got it really simplified. But it's still the same power of encryption. And PGP encryption, just to put in perspective what it would take for the NSA to decrypt an encrypted message that was encrypted with StartMail, if you were to write, let's say you wrote a single-sided one-page Word document, and then you put it through a confetti shredder, and it came out the size of just little specks, just little confetti. And then you took that confetti and you mixed it with enough confetti to fill the Grand Canyon 1,000 times over, that was just white, or maybe white with other little black specks on it, but it wasn't your message, and you stirred all that up, and you threw it into 1,000 Grand Canyons. That's the amount of effort and time it would take for them to decrypt your message. They would have to go through every single individual piece of confetti, look at every single one, figure out which ones go together to create the puzzle of your message, and they'd have to go through, you know, it would take them decades, literally, 40, 50 years to be able to manually, to even do that with high-speed computers today. So that's just to give you a perspective of the power of encryption. It's really, really powerful stuff. You can't crack it. You can't get into it. It takes crunching. And even if you could do that, you would crunch one message, not the thousands of messages that you're sending every month. So if I were the NSA and I wanted to know what your message was, if I felt that your encrypted message was important, I'm not going to snag your message and try to decrypt it because that's going to take me forever. What instead the government has been doing has been putting spyware or malware into people's computers. And if they can't do that, they literally have these black box jobs where they'll literally come into your home. And they'll put a physical device on your computer so that the next time you're logging on or you're reading something or you're doing whatever, they're capturing everything that's going on your computer. So the encryption is not the weak link. I guess that's what I mean to say. If you have encryption, you can be guaranteed that no one's going to be getting into the encryption. But you can't be guaranteed that no one's going to be reading your messages because there are 1,001 other ways that they've come up with. In fact, recently we heard that Hewlett-Packard was sending that there were actually some photographs on a website of government agents intercepting Hewlett-Packard computers and actually putting spyware in them and then putting them back in the boxes and letting them continue on their way to be delivered. So, you know, that kind of thing. If the government has actually intercepted your brand new computer before you even took it out of the box and put spyware on it, then no amount of StartPage or StartMail or anything else is going to protect you against that. So I guess the reassuring part, most of us are not subject to that kind of detailed individual surveillance. And here's where StartPage or StartMail really comes in. Is we know from Ed Snowden that there are these massive vacuum programs that vacuum up all traffic that goes across servers. And so basically any traffic that's traveling in the clear, that's unencrypted, traveling through the internet, that fits the email protocol can be vacuumed up by the government. And if they vacuum up millions and millions of messages, then they have data mining programs that go through those messages and they look for keywords. They might be looking for the name Ron Paul. They might be looking for the word patriot. They might be looking for whatever it is that they're looking for. And so once they find those messages, then they actually segregate those messages, drill down, and actually have human beings read them and assign a threat score. Or maybe they say, if I see 50 messages from this person within a given week, then they're going to go on my watch list and I'm going to look more closely. So that kind of thing happens automatically. No humans are involved. It's an automatic data processing process that's occurring with all of our email and all of our correspondence without us having to do really anything or be guilty in any way. And it's totally unconstitutional, totally illegal, but they're doing it anyway. When you send encrypted mail and it gets sucked into a program like that, they're seeing a bunch of gobbledygook. And they may not even recognize that it's gobbledygook, but they recognize that they don't see the word constitution or abortion or whatever you want to say in there. And so those messages just kind of get, they just kind of pass on through. So it's a way to protect yourself against bulk surveillance, mass surveillance, data mining programs designed to catalog people according to the kinds of things they talk about. And you will basically escape under the radar of that because they really can't see any content in your messages. But again, if you become the personal target of an investigation, and even though they won't be able to crack your encryption, they'll find other ways to figure out what your correspondence is.
And what's your advice concerning social media? Is it a necessary?
I'm not a fan. I'm concerned that people are so addicted to it. My SpyChips co-author and I actually write, we're the technology and security columnists for eHow.com, and we recently wrote an article about something called Facebook Atlas, which is really interesting. What Facebook is doing, Facebook's trying to compete with Google, the biggest market research company on earth, and Facebook is probably number two right now because they know all of our connections and what we're interested in. We post all this stuff. So what Facebook has done is actually really clever. They've figured out that people are absolutely addicted to Facebook and they cannot stay off of it despite trying. They can't stay off of it. And so what Facebook Atlas does, like an atlas tells you a map, Facebook Atlas tells every single device you ever log into your social media from and links them all to you. So one of the problems marketers have had in the past is, let's say you're on your smartphone and you happen to look something up and then later you're at your office and you buy it from your desktop computer. There's no way to know that that's you on both those devices. That's been one of the big challenges of this kind of 360 total degree of the customer they're trying to get. So what Facebook is offering is the ability to know that if you're on your desktop computer at work, of course you're going to log onto your Facebook account and you're going to identify yourself with your password and your login. And when you're on your smartphone, you're not going to be able to resist using your smartphone to log into your Facebook account with your password and your login. And so what Facebook has begun doing is begun capturing the device IDs, the information associated with every device you use to log in, along with its precise location and any other cookies or things that they can see that you're doing. So they're capturing a 360-degree view of your use of Facebook, of your use of various technologies, locations, places, all the stuff that you're doing, because they know you can't stay out of Facebook. If you've got a Facebook account, no matter what device you're on, that's the first place you're going to go. And so I think this is important for people to recognize because Facebook's been caught doing some nasty things. One of the more disturbing ones is they were actually they were working with a professor, and you probably heard about this, to try to figure out how to influence large groups of people emotionally. And what they did an experiment, which is horrifying. They provided a certain number of Facebook users with they manipulated the news feed that they get every day through their Facebook news. And some people got just good news. Some people got really horrible bad news with nothing good or neutral. And then what Facebook did was they watched this population that had received bad news to see if they could actually influence their mood for the rest of the day. And the way they determined whether seeing this bad news put people in a bad mood was they watched the kinds of posts that people were making, thumbs up, thumbs down, hi, good to see you, I'm depressed, whatever. They watched these people for 24 hours after giving them this bad news. And they were able to determine, sure enough, if you manipulate the newsfeed people see, they tend to write more depressed and negative things throughout the day, and you can make them depressed. Now, why does this worry me? Well, it worries me because the professor who was involved in this research has also worked with the U.S. military and with military research on psychology. And one of the big moves now that they can now do through social media that used to be impossible is they can determine what kinds of media messages on Fox or CNN or in USA Today, what kinds of messages result in certain behavior on the part of the public. And because in the past it used to be really hard to tell this, now you don't have to get people in a focus group in a room and ask them questions and show them various versions of articles. You can just post the article, and then you can watch your subject population that you've identified and see how they respond to the article. And it's really manipulating the entire news cycle, because the news cycle is now being controlled on the basis of the Facebook responses from people. So they can see, if they tell you about Benghazi and they tell it this way, then people respond that way. But if they tell it this other way, then they respond this other way. And so we are being manipulated through the news by providing in real time psychological responses that psychology researchers would have salivated over the opportunity to have a focus group the size of all of Facebook to figure out how to hone their messages. So they've got it down to an absolute science now, where they know exactly how to phrase things in order to maximally manipulate the U.S. population into feeling psychologically or emotionally in particular ways that they want you to feel. And if for some reason they post a story and people respond the wrong way, then they immediately know how to clean it up and make people feel a different way. And so the fact that we're posting, responding to stories, that we're giving our emotional responses, that we're sharing these stories, we're talking about them, is one of the worst possible things we could do, because we're providing them with data that they can then use to manipulate our responses, and we may never even be the wiser. It's brilliant.
That is just absolutely insane. And if you think about that, Project Mockingbird was admitted by the CIA that they'd had that in place since the 50s, and then CIA Director William Colby admitted in the church hearings decades later that they still had people working in the media purposely trying to influence people's thoughts and attitudes towards policy. And if that's what they were doing 30, 40 years ago, it's really mind-boggling what the possibilities are for them to manipulate us now, isn't it?
Yeah, and here's the problem, is even if you don't participate in it, the psychological insights that have been gained from just watching your fellow countrymen and women are enough to manipulate even you. So this is the part that's really disturbing about this. The psychological insights of the 20th century, I mean, I've studied human development and psychology, and, you know, we were back with Skinner and the ringing the bell and the dogs and Pavlov and all that back in the beginning of the 20th century. So this is a relatively new field of endeavor to understand human response and human psychology. And for all through the 20th century, it was actually very challenging to understand how the human mind worked. We didn't have MRI machines. We didn't have all the psychological, neurobiological understanding of the brain and the ability to actually watch people respond to things that we have now. And in addition, it was hard to get people together that would be a representative group of the population and actually watch how they responded. I mean, people get kind of bored, they get tired, that you can't keep them in a room for a week and watch everything they do. So the social media has really been an explosion of understanding of both individual psychological responses and mass psychological responses. And in the same way, in the 20th century, there was a lot of research into addiction, because the drug culture sort of introduced this problem in the 1960s of people becoming addicted to drugs. We had alcohol addiction even prior to that. So a lot of well-meaning psychologists and psychiatrists spent a lot of time, social science researchers, trying to understand how people become addicted to things in order to help them, in order to make them healthy and help stop addiction. And then we found that the creators like Blizzard, who make World of Warcraft, were actually studying and hiring addiction researchers, people with this background, in order to figure out how to use their insights to build addiction into their products so that they would be irresistible, so that they would become multi-billion dollar companies that people couldn't say no to and couldn't resist. So a lot of this insight, you know, the Bible says people knowledge will be greatly increased, people will run to and fro. The greatly increased knowledge of understanding how to motivate people, how to make people addicted, how to make people part with their money, how to make people discouraged, how to make people feel that resistance is futile or give up or make them feel, you know, you name it. Those insights, that understanding, which humankind has never had before. I mean, we've got a better understanding of the mind and motivations of people than we've ever had. And it's being used in ways to make us docile, to make us compliant, to make us part with our money to make these people wealthy, to make us truly feel that we can sit back on the sidelines and let the Republicans and Democrats duke it out on the TV, just like the you know, Red Sox and the Yankees, and we get to sit back and consume our consumer products and watch our smart TVs that are watching us back, and somehow it's all going to work out. And so I think they've really drained away a lot of the resistance out of the American public through these kinds of insights.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Katie Armor offers affordable body armor, including level 3 trauma plates made of AR-500 steel. They can endure multiple rounds from pistols and rifles up to 7.62 NATO. Their plates are available with Rhino Linings coatings to reduce spaw. Go to katiearmor.com, that's CATIArmor.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And I think you're right about the draining out the resistance, because after the Snowden links, I mean, there was, it kind of went through the news cycle and then it just kind of died out, and we didn't really see any mass protesting. We haven't really heard anybody taking any firm action, and a lot of people just kind of shrugged their shoulders and started tweeting about the next thing on the news cycle.
Yeah, I think there's a real sense that there's nothing we can do about it, I think, for one. I think also we're so surrounded by fictional accounts of things happening that it becomes difficult to even understand what's real and what's fiction, or how reality even impacts us. I mean, if you think about it, previous generations were not exposed to visual representations of things that weren't true. I mean, you could go to a play, I guess, but it took place on a stage and it was actors, and there's a way your brain can wrap around that. But we're exposed from the earliest age to movies, video games, violence, television programs, all kinds of things that are not true. And even people who are concerned about a nasty future might have watched the movie The Matrix, or might have seen something like Minority Report, in which terrible things are happening. And it truly is my belief that we are exposed to these terrible concepts in fictional form first, so that when they happen in real form, our initial horror over them has been drained away. And so it's like, oh yeah, that again, I've already seen that. My brain has already processed that. I've already dealt with that possibility of people in vats or the government knowing every thought. And so when it happens in real life, you're less inclined to have your natural, oh my gosh, I'm going to pick it in the streets or riot or take a pitchfork. You're instead like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. And so I think there's a real danger in the fact that a lot of our dystopian entertainment is really going down a future road of ugly developments that later turn around and actually happen right before our eyes. And we're surprised that we don't see the resistance to them. But I think it's because people have already, in a deep psychological subconscious way, made peace with them through having watched the movie. You sit in a theater, you sit at home in front of the TV and the VHS, you watch the movie, something terrible is happening in the movie, your emotions are all stirred and they want to respond, and this is terrible and it's awful. And then at the end of the movie, you get up, you go to the kitchen, you get a snack, you get in your car, you drive home, and nothing goes wrong. Nothing happened to you. So it sends a very powerful signal. This nasty, horrible, horrific, satanic thing can happen, and you're fine afterwards. So then when you turn around and you turn on Fox News and they say this thing is happening, you're no longer inclined to really resist it or fight against it. So a big part of this is our artificial media making us accustomed to, or sort of softening us up to, accept these things when they come.
Wow. It's a lot of great information, a lot of great stuff for us to think about. Now, Dr. Albright, where's the best place to purchase your new book?
Thank you so much for asking. My book, I Won't Take the Mark, is designed for kids, probably ages 4 through adult. It has King James Scripture, so if you want a refresher of the Mark of the Beast portion of Revelation, it's a perfect place to get it, because it's word for word out of the Bible. It is available at virtue. prepperrecon.com. I've actually got a flip book on there where people can click up a little book and flip through the pages and see what the artwork looks like. The book itself is $25. It comes with a 8x10 fully illustrated, beautiful, frameable certificate where the child actually promises never to take the mark of the beast. And that's really to honor the promise I made my grandmother when I was 8 years old and she made me promise. And that promise stuck with me the rest of my life. I don't know that I would be a Christian had I not made that promise and seen the words of Revelation coming true around me. So she really inoculated me. And my goal really is to help parents and grandparents inoculate their children, because this generation may well be the generation to be approached by somebody with a syringe in their hand saying, I want to put your bank account information in your right hand, and all you got to do is sign the statement of faith in the beast or whatever it might be. And we really do need to train up our kids to learn to resist and to know that when that time comes, they must say no. So it's at virtuepress.com. It's also available on Amazon. The book is called I Won't Take the Mark. And we also, because I wanted this to be sort of a gift that you could give your children for Easter, for their birthday, for Christmas, the book comes with a certificate, and then we also have beautiful matching frames on the website and beautiful boy and girl gift wrap as well. So if you purchase the book and a frame and the gift wrap, we'll put it all together for you and send that gift to this special child in your life, which will be an absolutely unforgettable thing. And the idea, they read the book, they understand it, they sign the certificate, they put it on their wall. And having that on the wall, I've got to say, you know, I remember everything that hung on the wall when I was a kid. I went to bed looking at it. I woke up in the morning getting dressed looking at it. And so it's really a way that it doesn't just become a book that gets read and forgotten, but it becomes something that is an actual part of your child's growing up that they're surrounded by and thinking about. And it, to the extent that it prompts them to think twice about these technologies and to use technology but not have technology use them, to the extent that it really gets them thinking about the truths of the Bible, that the Bible is being fulfilled before our very eyes. We're seeing it right now all around us. I think it's absolutely the best gift a parent or grandparent could give to their child.
And Daniel had to make a choice whether he was going to bow to the statue or go to the lion's den. And Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, they had to make a choice whether they were going to follow the king's order or if they were going to be thrown into the fire. So it's something that happens, and as followers of God, we got to be prepared for that. And I think when we're mentally prepared for that and spiritually prepared for it and we're prayed up and we're thinking about it, I think that it gives us a better shot of being able to take a stand when the time comes. So I think that's a great idea with your new book. And can you remind us one more time what the promo is for Start Mail and where we go to get signed up for that, and then also where we can go to add Start Page to our browser for the default search engine.
Well, perfect. So, and I should mention, I do a daily radio program from 4 to 6 Eastern, and that's at KatherineAlbrecht.com or KMAshow.com. We've also got archives up there people can listen to. So if you want to catch my radio show, I spend a lot of time talking about these kinds of things. So the email program is called Start Mail, and actually our original product was Start Page, because everybody's got a Start Page or your home page that you open your computer. So startpage.com is the search engine that you can add to your browser and make your home page. It does use Google, although Google will never see you or have any information from you. You can use ixquick.com, ixquick.com, if you don't want to use Start Page, but I would recommend using one of them instead of Google or some other search engine. So that's Start Page and Ixquick. And then the email program is called Start Mail. It is a $60 subscription for 1 year, but you don't have to commit. You can do a 7-day trial and kick the tires and test it out and see how great it is. And you can do that at startmail.com. If you purchase one account at $5 a month, we'll give you 2 free companion accounts. So you can begin sending fully private encrypted email right away. And everybody who's on Gmail, Yahoo, or Hotmail, please let this sear your conscience, because not only are you violating your own privacy by letting all those emails be read, but every single person you write to your email provider is capturing their personal information and their correspondence and their private messages to you. And so I think just as a service to the people we love and care about and correspond with, we owe it to them not to be feeding all of their correspondence into these big corporate machines as well. So I would love to see everybody get on board, everybody make the decision to just get out of Big Brother's spotlight and to really call Google on what they've been doing for the last 10 years, because nobody knows it. You know, spread the word, share the information. This is not an email program. It's a market research spy program, and it was designed to put them like a spider in the center of the web to watch all your correspondence, and it's time people figure it out and time people say, no, thank you. I don't care how free it is. You could pay me $50 a month. You don't have the right to spy on my email. Leave me alone. So that's startmail.com.
And your show is an absolute blessing. I like to download it because they're all downloadable. You can download them to your computer, put them on your mobile device, and I take it to the gym, listen to it while I'm on the glider. And you're very focused on a lot of the technological aspects and into the, you know, privacy and the liberty movement and things of that nature. Whereas Prepper Recon, our listeners, they kind of get it all. We kind of talk a lot about beans, bullets, and Band-Aids and all the preparedness type stuff, and then we touch on liberty issues, and we touch a little on technology and some politics once in a while. It's hard to get everything in and then do it all right. So it's great to have an alternative like your show that's very focused on that. And it's just a great place to go and learn about all of that stuff. So thank you for all the work you're doing in the fight for freedom. And thank you for making time to talk with us today.
Thank you. It's been a real blessing and a real pleasure. And I just pray every blessing on your program and all your listeners. Thanks so much.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.